This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood to be a part of a live national radio broadcast, play a role in bringing warmth to a child this holiday season, or catch an exhibit in the Arts District, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. I'm your host, Diane Mack. The countdown is on as Live From Here with Chris Thiele, formerly known as a Prairie Home Companion, heads to New Orleans for a national broadcast with special guest John Prine. Thiele is a 30-something MacArthur Genius Award recipient, a Grammy Award-winning mandolinist, composer, singer, and songwriter. We caught up with him by phone in his native California. Chris, welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Diane.
You've reached the one-year mark. And now the show has been renewed for another year. What are your thoughts on your success?
This is probably the most fun I've had as an adult, surely, and perhaps ever. Well, I got me a suit and an old guitar, and I made a down payment on a second-hand car. I got me a job on the radio, and I'm saving up money for a fiddle and a bow. The radio boogie. I love settling into it at this point. I loved the energy last year as well, that kind of almost frenetic amount of excitement revolving around doing a new big thing. But I think I love even more the sense of like, yeah, this is what I do now. This is what I do. And I still get that surge of energy right before the show starts. But that sense that this is a thing that happens in my life now. And on Saturdays, I get to hang out with, you know, a couple million of my closest friends.
Now, you are a bluegrass artist, a founding member of the band Nickel Creek and the Punch Brothers, but your music spans several musical genres. If this was a test and I was looking at a picture of you, three words would come to mind: seamless musical connections. Tell us about your musical philosophy and how music is more alike than unlike.
Thank you for saying that. I like those three words. I guess for me, music is music is music. I don't even really think in terms of, ooh, what happens when we put this genre in the same test tube. To me, they're kind of all the same, and the differences are largely aesthetic, like what instruments are they being played on. And that can create fundamental differences, I guess, but it rarely does, I think. I think the things that, given great pieces of music, are built on usually sort of the same thing, like what's the melody, what's the harmonic structure of the piece, does it have an interesting sense of counterpoint, what are the lyrics, are there lyrics, those kinds of things. And so whether the music is being played by a symphony orchestra or, you know, two electric guitars, bass and drums, or a bluegrass band or a string quartet or, you know, a jazz combo, it doesn't really matter. What matters is if it's good or not.
You have a new CD out, I believe. Thanks for listening. I love the title.
Thanks for listening. I suspect you can imagine, I got to the end of my first season and was sitting there, you know, with the song of the week before me. You know, as I am always sitting there on Monday morning, like, what am I going to write about? What's going to happen? And was kind of overwhelmed by the honor and privilege it is that whoever's listening right now, like I can speak directly to you. You might be in your car, you might be walking to the grocery store, listening to us in earbuds right now, streaming what we're doing together, what Diane and I are doing together right now, like on your phone or wherever you happen to be, you're giving us this time. That's incredible. It's me, I should be listening to you. And it's us, you should be listening to you. And if we travel together. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for listening. Especially now when listening is at such a premium. Just thank you so much for doing that. That means so much to me, and you're my hero for doing that. So the record became about that.
Now, in your upcoming performance in New Orleans, what can we look forward to?
A very excited host. I really, really love being in New Orleans. So much of what any of us who make music, love about music came from New Orleans. You can feel it in the air. You're walking around, you can kind of like hear Jelly Roll Morton or, you know, any number of these luminaries. You can hear that influx of the Irish, you know, when they started coming in droves to New Orleans and making their music, combining that with the music that was already being made there. You know, obviously, the foundations of jazz, and but then all the gospel stuff. You're just going to have a really excited host sitting in the thick of the majesty of New Orleans musical tradition.
Will any New Orleans musicians be playing on the show?
The Preservation Hall Jazz Band was just on the show, actually, in St. Paul, of all places. I'm very grateful that they made the trek up. At the end of the show, we'd all had so much fun together. They started talking, hey, you know, I know you guys are going to be at the Sanger. You want to talk about that? I want to talk about that. So I think they have some ideas for some musicians to look into. And, I mean, boy, it would be awfully nice to get, you know, some or all of them involved in that show. It's certainly not out of the question.
What are your thoughts or plans for the future?
To me, you know, when a thing stops growing, then it's dead. So we're gonna keep growing this thing. I have a 2.5-year-old little boy, and his development is just remarkable and inspirational as someone who's also in the act of developing a very young thing at this point. Our show is a year old. Its development actually reminds me of watching little Calvin experience the world. I feel like the show feels that way right now. It has this life of its own that I'm just getting to witness. These shows are more and more rangy, seemingly each week, and that thrills me. We are hurtled through these 2 hours on Saturday evenings. 2 hours are gone in the blink of an eye, and I think the more diversity you have amongst the guests, the more true that becomes. I think we're starting to find our footing on the spoken word front. Sketches are getting funnier. Oh, boy, I love working on stuff, I gotta say.
It's a very organic process.
Yeah, for sure. And everyone's working hard. We have such a great team in place. I'm really proud to be one of its members.
Chris Thiele, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
So nice to talk to you, Diane.
Enjoy New Orleans.
Oh, I most certainly will.
WWNO presents the New Orleans performance of Live From Here with Chris Thiele, January 20th at the Sanger Theater. Tickets are available online at sangernola.com. A limited number of premium tickets are available with a donation to WWNO at wwno.org/donate. Renowned pianist Ellis Marsalis, the Dirty Dozen Brass Band, the Faubourg Quartet, Baby Dolls, and more will join classical cellist Dr. Gianco in a special concert to spread warmth this holiday season. It's the annual Coats for Kids concert. Dr. Co joins us now to talk about this growing celebration. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Diane.
What are your thoughts about your success as this venture continues to grow?
Personally, I feel like I've become really New Orleanian right now. So it's just a huge honor for me, and it's the biggest joy for my holidays, too.
So how did this journey begin for you? Why did you want to give coats to children in need?
You know, holiday season somewhat is kind of sentimental for some people like me who is a foreigner and who is alone here. So I had to think about how I can celebrate my own holidays. And I thought, okay, instead of wanting to be taken care of, I will take care of someone. And I thought, okay, I'm going to help my community for sure. But how? I love giving away, but especially I love some meaning of the coat. My mom gave me a really nice coat when I passed college exam. And that time, my family was going through a really hard situation with the finance. So that coat meant to me a lot of things. But that time I was really chubby. So I realized just a few years ago, although I kept the coat for a long time, I wanted to give away to someone I really care. So I thought, okay, then I'm going to make a concert where I'm going to give a coat, and my friend hopefully will help to collect the coat for the kids in our community.
Now tell us a little bit more about yourself. You are a classical cellist.
I'm a classical cellist. I'm from South Korea. I came here after my studies in Germany to study in LSU, and then on my commencement day, I got my job at NUK as the chair of classical instrumental department, and I'm here.
What's on tap for the Coats for Kids concert? What can we look forward to?
So this year, Mr. Alice Masalis, who joined us 3 years ago, will return and play with me and hopefully with my quartet, which is Fobro Quartet. And also I will have Dirty Dozen Band, who will close the event and everybody will dance. But this time we are not going to dance alone because Baby Dolls will join us. And also, as a tradition at the beginning of the event, it is a really huge gift from my student at NUK. They will welcome the people in the atrium as a group, just like 30 minutes performance before the concert.
So tell us about some of the works that we're likely to hear.
Alice Masalis and I will play a Christmas song, and then we are going to have string quartet opening the whole concert, and of course 30 Dozen will have their band music. But also, this is a surprise, my quartet, as the first time they're going to play a salsa music. I have now my first ever hobby, which is salsa. And my teacher, Aurelio Gonzalez, and his student will join to dance to the string quartet music.
So it's going to be hard to keep still at this concert.
I know. And also, we are going to repeat because we played piece by Alice Masalis together last year. My quartet and jazz musicians played together. His piece arranged by his former student. So we are going to play again the Fourth Autumn as a collaboration between classical musicians and jazz musicians.
Yeah, you have a variety of musical styles being offered.
Yeah, it is true, and I really try still not to lose, you know, the meaning of the concert. But what we really enjoy is that we are also showing the best quality of the music. And also on stage, you are going to see all the collaboration between other genres music.
How many children are you hoping to help this year? What's your goal?
Surprisingly, we were able to collect 300 to 400 codes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Right. And last year, actually, we stopped counting after 400. And another thing is I usually ask gently used codes. But last year, we got really a lot of new codes. So since we are moving to new venue, which is New Orleans Jazz Market, and it has more seats, and people are curious what's going on there, and especially what I can do there with my musicians, I expect maybe a little more than last year,
so
hopefully.
A little north of 400.
Mm-hmm. And I have a couple of quotes from my closet as well.
And the price of admission?
Is open to public. So if you have a coat, please bring. If not, you are going to just join our celebration.
Classical cellist and Coats for Kids concert founder, Dr. Gianco. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Diane.
The Coats for Kids concert will take place tomorrow evening, December 20th, at the New Orleans Jazz Market, 1436 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard, 7 p.m. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNL, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Black artists and history are the focus of a nationally touring exhibit, Solidary and Solitary, the Joyna Jeffrida Collection, in final weeks at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art. The exhibit, presented by the Hellas Foundation, is co-organized by the Ogden and the Baltimore Museum of Art. Katie Siegel is one of three curators. She joins us by phone from Baltimore. Hello.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Let's begin with the title of this exhibit, Solidary and Solitary. How was it chosen, and what is the relation to the works on display?
I've done an enormous amount of research on the history of Black artists in America in the mostly the 20th and 21st century, and I realized that the same issue kept coming up again, pressure to represent the Black community, pressure from a dominant culture to make images of Blackness that were legible to the dominant culture, or pressure from within the Black community to make positive and sort of uplifting images to combat racial stereotypes. So either way, a Black artist, like a woman artist or a Latino artist, starts out with the pressure to represent a group identity. And on the other hand, the 20th century is the great era of personal freedom and individual accomplishment. So these artists, like every other American artist, they wanted to be as free as possible, to represent themselves as specifically and individually as possible. So this was a double bind that went between being together and being oneself alone, that goes through the interviews and statements by Black artists throughout the 20th century, and also through the writing of great cultural figures in the Harlem Renaissance forward. So I realized that there were many artists who, in fact, didn't want to choose, but wanted to be able to do both, who wanted to be able to engage with a group identity and with other Black artists, not in a stereotypical way, but in a way that felt genuine to them, that the presence of older Black artists and historical Black artists was so important as a kind of, not influence, but corroboration and confirmation and camaraderie for younger Black artists. And they wanted to be able to choose that kind of togetherness and also choose to be themselves alone and individual completely. So I wanted to find a way to articulate this, and I found that someone already said it much better than I could have, a beautiful writer named Edouard Glissant, who wrote a book called The Poetics of Relation. And he wrote in this book of the possibility of being both solidary and solitary. So I was very excited to find out that someone had captured this dilemma and the possibility of a way out of it.
Who are the collectors, and where do the works come from?
The collectors are Pamela Joyner and Fred Giuffrida. They're a married couple in California. They travel all over and see things all over the world. Ms. Joyner and Mr. Giuffrida have been focusing on Black artists for a number of years, and together they've built probably the preeminent private collection of work by Black artists in the world. Their collection itself constitutes a history in and of itself, probably the most important history of Black modernism.
Can you describe a couple of the pieces in the exhibit?
There's a great sculptor named Mel Edwards. He has a large floor sculpture made out of metal. It's a beautiful piece called Rocker. It's a piece dedicated to Norman Lewis, who is the oldest artist in the exhibition. And it's a series that Mel did that's based on his memories of his grandmother's rocker, which is a lovely connection to make. One of the curved sides rocks, and one of them doesn't. And he remembers something that Norman Lewis always said to him, that people in a conversation would not listen but just talk. So one of the sides of the rockers works, one of them doesn't. And so Mel makes very humorous pieces, but also very serious works. There's a series of works called the Lynch Fragments, a series he began in 1963 in the wake of social unrest and violence and injustice against African Americans, and continues to this day, and is filled with hooks and chains and tools and shovel pieces that evoke that history of violence and repression. And then there are these very beautiful, enormous paintings by Mark Bradford, who's representing the United States in the Venice Biennale this year, which is the Olympics of the art world. And he has two incredibly gorgeous paintings, gigantic. And the fantastic thing that they are shimmering and gorgeous and liquid and profound, they are also entirely made out of paper, commercial paper. And it's exciting to see someone who happens to be African-American, but also is the most accomplished artist working with paper in the history of art. I think it's tremendously exciting. I think you'll be physically grabbed by the most abstract works They are so beautiful. But there are also beautiful representations of Black men and women by Lynette Yadomboake, who's a Nigerian artist living in London, who makes gorgeous portraits of fictional people who all happen to be Black. I think Pamela and Fred have felt like they are able to move into figuration with newer works as artists find ways to move away from stereotyping the Black body, to find images that are imaginative and creative, and just naturally these figures are Black, but there's nothing stereotypical about them. This is a gorgeous room of paintings that looks like old masters, like Rembrandt or Rubens, but they happen to be Black figures painted by a young Black woman. The whole show is just ravishing. I hope people come and see for themselves.
Katie Siegel, Senior Curator for Research and Programming at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Diane.
The exhibit Solidary and Solitary from the Joyner Jofrida Collection will be on view through January 21st at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art, 925 Camp Street. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack, wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.